You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many of us try to cook and eat seasonably as much as possible, but finding fresh local vegetables at the farmer's market can be a challenge at this time of year. The fall vegetables like turnips, beets, kohlrabi, and celery root are on their last legs, and the new spring crops haven't come in yet. So how do you stay inspired in the kitchen this time of year? Do you just find a lot of recipes for potatoes? Melissa Clark is here to share some ideas and advice. She writes she is the author of the 32 cookbooks, and she writes the New York Times dining section column, A Good Appetite. Her most recent cookbook is Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. Welcome back to our show.
Great to be here.
We also invite calls from our listeners. If you have a question about what you should do with what's in season now, give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. So, Melissa, what kinds of produce are you finding at your local farmer's market at this time of year?
It's sad. I mean, I still go to the farmer's market every single week, but I'm buying the same things. I'm buying kale, which you can still get a very small, teeny-weeny little bunches of kale. I guess it's been wintered over. You can find some broccoli, Rob. Again, something that's been wintered over. And when I say wintered over, what that means is that the base of the plant has been covered, usually with some sort of hay or something to keep it from freezing. And then as the weather warms up, little shoots come out. And so we're starting to see that right now. We're kind of having this early spring. But it's teeny. It's not like the normal kale. Sunchokes. Lots of sunchokes, great keeper crop, potatoes, potatoes, onions. But you know what? That's a recipe right there, bubble and squeak.
Is that why the recipes you've written about in today's times are all for desserts that don't require any fruits or vegetables?
Yeah, I'm a little bit busted on that, absolutely. You know, this is a great time of year to make some cakes and to make some puddings. Today I write 3 pudding recipes. Don't you want a pudding today? Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little butterscotch.
People used to have root cellars. Do turnips and rutabagas and beets store well and last through the winter?
You know, they store well under very controlled, very cold environments. I have tried to store them, you know, and then we'll keep for a while in the fridge, actually. I mean, I've had beets in there that have actually lasted about a month, so I am sort of starting to use up those, too. I mean, at this point, it's slim pickings in the back of my crisper. But because we don't have root cellars in our New York City houses and apartments, we have to rely on the farmers. And the farmers keep their crops. And most of what they're bringing to the farmer's market has been harvested a long time ago. You know, all those potatoes. And apples, exactly. Those are kept under very cold. Let's just say cold environment to keep those crops in good shape for us to eat.
Your latest cookbook is organized by season and by month. So what's available in February and into March that you like to cook?
Well, cabbage. Okay. I'm a big cabbage fan. What do you think of cabbage? Are you pro cabbage? Not so much on cabbage?
I'm fine with cabbage. It does does have
certain
side effects.
Yes, exactly. But I think the more you eat it, the more you get used to those. And cabbage is one of the best keeper crops there is. If you buy one cabbage, it will keep in your fridge for a month. And usually a cabbage is more than you want to eat all at once. So what you can do is you take a slice off of it and you make a little coleslaw. Coleslaw, crispy, delicious salad to have this time of year. Or you roast it. I stir fry it sometimes. So I would say go out, buy cabbage and keep it in your fridge. Another thing, kale. I mean, obviously I talked about kale. Kale is... we've been seeing a lot of kale salads all over the news, you know, and in restaurants, and those are great. I mean, you're not getting fresh salad greens right now. Make a kale salad instead.
My problem with kale is, and the same, it's similar to the problem I have with spinach, which is also around, is that it takes so much time to prepare. With the kale, you got to cut off all of those stems.
Yep.
With spinach, it's a matter of washing it and then washing it again and then washing it again. But these are the only things that we can eat raw. Because
carrots too. Mm-hmm. You'll see some carrots. But yeah, pretty much you're right. You're not seeing a lot of, you know, those tender greens. I mean, unless someone has a hothouse, you're really not seeing the tender local greens.
So most of the root vegetables are things that you have to cook slowly, roast them, boil them, mm-hmm. fry them for a long time.
Yep.
One of the things that strikes me is because I like to do this, I cut up a whole bunch of different root vegetables, put a little olive oil, some salt on them, and stick them in the oven for a very long time. And they come out incredibly sweet. Do they have a lot of sugar in them?
Yeah, of course, the starch. I mean, all those starchy root vegetables, as you cook them, that is just, you know, becoming sweet. And the starch does convert to sugar. And I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I think that... someone will call in and tell me which is correct. It's either they're sweeter and there's more sugar available when you pick them, or the starch converts to sugar and they get sweeter the longer they're kept. So someone please tell me which one is right. But the point is they have all that starch. They have a lot of sugar. And when you roast them, that sugar caramelizes and turns golden brown in the oven. And the great thing about roasting root vegetables is that it's the same recipe no matter what root vegetable, which I love because I don't have to remember it. Like you said, peel it, chop it up, put it in bite-sized cubes. Olive oil, salt, pepper is all you need, 400 degrees, until it looks and smells delicious.
And you don't have to add some things earlier or later.
No, exactly.
Because beets are also a source of sugar for the sugar industry. But what about the greens, beet greens and carrot? Well, carrot greens I usually just stick in the freezer and then later use in a stock. Is that what you do with beet greens as well?
Oh, beet greens. If you can, you know, probably this time of year you're not getting beets with the greens attached if they're local, because the greens have, you know, they've died off. But if you find beautiful beets with the greens attached, you're basically getting two for the price of one. You roast those beets and then you saute the greens. Sauteed beet greens are just like Swiss chard. They're so tender, and a little bit of garlic, a little bit of olive oil. And here's what I like to do. I like to add cumin to anything that has that kind of, you know, any leafy green vegetable that I'm sauteing, a little bit of whole cumin seeds, which you toast with the garlic before you add the greens. Fantastic.
My guest is Melissa Clark, whose latest cookbook, your 32nd?
32nd.
Is Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. You also, I'm sure, read her regularly in the New York Times dining section. Her column is called A Good Appetite and is usually one of the featured columns. Today, three recipes.
three puddings.
Three pudding. Well, but so they're all, in this case, it all has to do with cream and stuff like that. Let's talk a bit about some of the winter vegetables. Oh, first I want to tell everyone the phone number again. It's 212-433-9692. That's area code 212-433-WNYC. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Parsnips.
Now, parsnips. That's
okay.
A good one.
How do you suggest preparing them? I know you have a recipe for latkes using parsnips instead of potatoes. Are they a good substitute for potatoes?
You know, they have a sweeter flavor than potatoes do. So I like to use them with potatoes together because they'll just add, you know, this very earthy, very sweet flavor. You can make mashed parsnips and potatoes, mash them together, boil them together, mash them together, lots of butter. And it's just, people will eat this and they'll think it's mashed potatoes. And then they'll taste it and they'll say, these are the best mashed potatoes I've ever had in my life. And then you can tell them, oh, well, I snuck some parsnip in there.
Also, celery root, you can sneak that into mashed
Same
potatoes
thing.
And people don't notice that it is celery root, and yet it makes the mashed potatoes taste great.
Well, the thing about celery root, parsnip is very sweet. So when you add that to mashed potatoes, or if you just roast it, you get this honeyed, earthy flavor. Celery root has a freshness. It actually, to me, celery root really tastes like it's almost going to be spring. You know, it has this green flavor. So when you add it to the mashed potatoes, it adds a complexity, but not necessarily a sweetness.
How do parsnips compare nutritionally with potatoes?
They, I think parsnips are probably, you know, I'm not exactly sure about that, but I think parsnips are a little bit better for you. I think they have, they're a little bit, they have more vitamins, but I don't remember.
But
exactly
they're uglier.
No, parsnips are prettier than potatoes. You think they're ugly? Okay, you know what's really ugly? Celery root.
I like celery root.
I love celery root. But you look at a celery root, they tend to be kind of hairy, and you think, how do I clean this thing? And if you've never bought a celery root, I can tell you right now, just take a knife to it, show no mercy, cut off all of the brown bits, and you're going to be left with this beautiful white bulb that you can also eat raw, which we were talking about things you can eat raw. You know, you don't eat parsnips raw, you don't eat sunchokes raw or potatoes, but carrots and carrots and celery root are fantastic, shredded together in a salad. with a mustard vinaigrette.
Can all the root vegetables be fried like latkes or made into fritters?
Yeah, they can, which is great. If you've never fried, parsnips are terrific. They turn golden brown. And celery root also. Add celery root to potato latkes. Next time you make potato pancakes, add a little bit of celery root. And you're going to get, it has a slightly different texture than the potato too. So it's really nice. You know, you get soft, soft potato, but the celery stays a little crispy. It's lovely.
Which brings us now to my favorite name for a root vegetable, rutabaga.
Rutabaga. You know, I was dubious of rutabaga for years. I would see these things and they look like waxy bowling balls and I would never buy them. And finally, one of the farmers at the farmer's market, this man, Bill Maxwell from Maxwell's Farm, he just handed me one. He said, please, just take this home. They're so delicious. And I did, and I have never looked back. Rutabagas taste like butternut squash with a little bit of turnip mixed in, like a pepperiness. And they are complex, they are sweet, they are fabulous. And there's actually a recipe on the website, right? And it's also from my book, for roasted rutabaga with a little bit of chili and a little bit of maple syrup. And the maple syrup helps the rutabaga caramelize in the oven. This is a terrific dish.
How do you do the chili? We're talking about raw...
No,
chili,
we're,
chili
powder. You know, it would be great to toss with poblano after it was cooked, but for this one, I used chili powder, just a little bit of chili powder. And if you have, you know, if you're serving this to people who don't like spice, still add the chili. Just be very, you know, parsimonious with it. But if you're serving it to someone who loves it spicy, just toss it in because it works so well with the sweetness of the maple syrup.
Lots of people are calling. I want to get to a few of these calls before we take a break. Alice from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
I love, oh, God, I'm having a senior moment, the kohlrabi.
Oh, kohlrabi.
I find it.
Do you like hot rabi, too? Sorry.
Ooh.
Anyway, I find it so difficult to peel it.
Yes.
Is there any tricks that you have?
You know, that is such a good point. It doesn't like the vegetable peeler. Do you use a vegetable peeler or a knife?
Yeah.
A vegetable.
Potato peeler.
Try to use a knife next time because, and even if you're losing a little bit more of the vegetable, it'll make it so much easier for you. Then this is what I like to do. I quarter them before I don't peel them whole. I find that hard. They're hard to hold. So I quarter them. And then when you have the little crescent in your hand, it's easier to take the paring knife and get right under the skin. I think it'll make it easier on you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And now we go to Ellen from Harlem. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I've heard about all this roasting of root vegetables. Is the microwave totally, you know, forbidden?
You know, the microwave will never give you that same caramelized flavor as roasting it in the oven.
But there are people who will argue that if you are in a rush,
yeah,
you can put all of them into the microwave and then put them in the oven, and it'll cut the time in half.
Absolutely. And the thing that, if you think of the microwave as almost like a giant steamer, you know, you're going to get the same texture as a steamed vegetable, which is really nice, too. I mean, not everything has to be golden brown and caramelized. You know, sometimes you want something that's just steamed and it just tastes like itself. There's no other flavor going on. It's just the pure flavor of parsnip or the pure flavor of celery root. Nothing wrong with using your microwave.
A friend of mine served me microwaved acorn squash a while back.
Ooh, and how was it?
Now I've been having microwaved acorn squash regularly. It's just so wonderful, and I do treat it a little bit. Olive oil makes it fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I just cut it in half and microwave it for between 10 and 15 minutes. And with cumin, which I happen to be one who likes, it's really interesting.
Well, thank you for calling us. Let's talk a bit about squash because we see a lot of different kinds. Kabocha squash, kabocha?
Yeah, kabocha. Kabocha is a really hearty squash, and it's one of the few that I'm still actually seeing at the farmer's market. There's a little butternut around, but I haven't seen any acorns in a while.
I haven't seen spaghetti squash.
I haven't either. I think, I don't know if it's just gone or if it doesn't keep well, but kabocha squash is very hearty. The thing about it is it's hard to cut, and here's another microwave trick, just the lady who called about the microwave. Take your winter squash, if you're having a hard time cutting through it because the skin is so tough, put it in the microwave for about a minute, and then it softens it, and then you'll be able to get your knife through it.
Are most squashes interchangeable in recipes?
Not really. Butternut, acorn, and kabocha are similar, but they're a little bit different. The kabocha has a drier flesh. So if you are going to make, say, a pie out of it, you're going to need to add more moisture. If you're going to roast it, you might need to add a little bit extra oil. You know, when you cut up a squash, just look at it. If it looks moist, you add a little less oil. If it looks dry, you add a little more.
Some people make their pumpkin pie out of squash. Well, I think pumpkins are squash, but I mean out of different squash, and they just call it pumpkin pie.
I do that. That's me. I am so guilty of that. I lie every single Thanksgiving. I serve pumpkin pie, and I never, ever use pumpkins.
What do you use?
I've done it with kabocha, although, a kabocha is a little bit dry. I usually like to use, butternut squash, or you know what's great? Delicata. That is one of my favorite squashes. If you can find delicata, I think it has the sweetest flavor of all.
We invite more of your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692 if you want to speak to Melissa Clark. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Melissa, as you probably know, writes the New York Times dining section column, A Good Appetite. She's also the author of 32 cookbooks. You'd never believe it, considering how young she is. The most recent one from Hyperion is called Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. We'll be back with more after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Melissa Clark of the New York Times. She writes a Good Appetite column. She also has written 32 cookbooks, the most recent one from Hyperion, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes That You Can't Wait to Make. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692 because we are talking about finding fresh produce at this time of year, the worst time of year to find fresh produce, although I would have thought things would be a little easier because of this fall spring that we've been having. I know just looking at my own flower pots, the plants are already starting to bud. Tulip bulbs are already starting to come up. This is very early for tulips.
I know, and we have daffodils all over the park, but there's nothing, except for the chives, there's nothing really edible yet that I've seen.
Let's go to another caller, Robert. Robert from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. The dish that I'm recommending is called burdock kimpira, and it contains burdock root, which is not easily found, but in Oriental markets and the Park Slope Food Co-op, if you happen to be a member, and gourmet stores. And what it is a long root vegetable. You could cut it in small pieces and saute it with carrots and onions, add a little tamari, soy sauce, and then steam it in water. And it's very good as a complete dish or as a side dish.
Yeah, burdock is, you can also, I've seen burdock at the farmer's market. It is, you're right, it is a great seasonal, it seems like you can get it all year round, actually. You can also forage for it in the park, but I think that's illegal. But burdock has, if you've never made burdock, it looks like it's a very long root, covered with soil, and it looks like, you think, a kind of a white, dirty carrot. What is this thing? But you peel it, and it's, the flesh is tan-colored, and it has an amazing, earthy, almost nutty flavor, and I love it. You're right. Steamed burdock with a little bit of tamari and a little bit of mirin. The kimpira dish you're talking about happens to be my daughter's favorite thing in the entire world. We usually get it when we go for Japanese food, but you can make it at home, and I really appreciate you calling with that idea because I haven't actually thought about cooking burdock in a while, and I think all you listeners, next time you see burdock, please try it because it really has an unusual flavor, and it's just not that hard to deal with. It's like a carrot.
A listener in New Jersey writes, what's the difference between rutabaga and kohlrabi?
Two different vegetables, but they have a very similar mustardy flavor. You know, almost like a turnip, except kohlrabi is juicier and sweeter. I like to think of kohlrabi as like a fruity turnip. It's just got juice running through it. Fantastic for salads, but rutabaga is more like a butternut squash crossed with a turnip.
And another listener asks, is there any other use for celery root celeriac other than in soups? Well, we mentioned that you could put it in potatoes,
yeah.
Mashed potatoes. You can make fritters out of it.
You can roast it and eat it raw in a salad. It's fantastic.
Can you put it in soups?
Yeah, soups. Wonderful in soups. In soups, the nice thing about having it in soups is that it's a different texture than potato. It's a little bit softer.
Now, what about freezing these things? Because we eat them fresh, when we can't get anything else. But there, in another couple of months, we're not going to have any of these things. Is it a good idea to freeze them?
We're not going to miss them. We're going to be so happy to get those ramps. We're going to say, potatoes? What potatoes? But you know what? We were talking just a minute ago about mushrooms, and I really want to talk about mushrooms because cultivated mushrooms you can get all year round, and they're at the farmer's market right now. And if you've been passing by the mushrooms, stop for a second and buy yourself a beautiful maitake mushroom or some shiitakes, or even they have little cremini mushrooms. Mushrooms are a fantastic, obviously they're great for sauteing, but if you haven't ever made them into a salad, a raw cremini mushroom salad, a little bit of olive oil and some Parmesan shaved on top, this is just the thing to kind of get you out of your winter vegetable blues.
And Pamela from Long Island has called in to talk about mushrooms. Did we answer your question?
For the criminies and the shiitakes, yes, but I have this very large mushroom. I mean, we're lucky we have a farmer's market and they grow vegetables year-round. Mm-hmm. It's not a greenhouse, but I forgot what it is, but he's got everything, and it's wonderful. I just came from there, and I don't know what to do with this great big mushroom.
Is it a...
It looks like a parsnip, almost.
Oh, you've got the king mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
Those are so wonderful roasted, or pan fry them. Actually, I would pan fry it. I would take that mushroom, I would cut it lengthwise into quarters, so you have these big thick spears,
mm-hmm.
and I would just roast them, pan roast them, get your pan really hot. I would use peanut oil because it's good at, it has a good nutty flavor,
okay.
Or you could use olive oil, and you want to sear the mushrooms all over, and then just add a little bit of liquid, maybe a little bit of broth, or even just a little soy sauce, something to just sort of steam up the pan,
okay.
And let it cook for 2 minutes. Garlic is great there, but you don't need it. Sesame oil, a drizzle of sesame oil, fantastic.
I thought she was going to be talking about another huge mushroom that often is used as a substitute for meat.
Oh, the portobello?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But then she said it looked like, so we had the
but
long
portobellos
shape, yeah.
can be roasted, and some people even chop them up and make them into the equivalent of veggie hamburgers.
Yeah, you can do that. Portobellos, I mean, you know, creminis are smaller versions of portobellos, and unless you want the big show-stopping size of a giant mushroom cap on your plate, I would recommend buying the creminis over the portobellos. I just think they have a slightly better flavor.
We go now to Edith. Hi.
Hello. Fennel is lovely, and I saw beautiful fennel in the market last week. And I take it equal amounts with thin slices with onion, and I saute it in olive oil with salt and pepper, and I throw in a handful of crimson or yellow raisins with that. And I don't cook it very long, maybe 10 minutes max. And it's lovely with any kind of meat, and it reheats very well. And I think fennel's overlooked.
Well, I have to admit, fennel is not one of those things that usually appeals to me. It has that kind of anisey side to it, which doesn't appeal
to
me.
Yeah.
If I wanted to eat licorice, I would eat licorice, the things I used to eat, those twists when I was a kid.
Which I love, too. But fennel, I think fennel is fabulous, and I thank you for bringing this up, because fennel, again, it is one of those overlooked vegetables. A lot of people don't like it because it has a slight licorice flavor. I love it. And it is the recipe that was just talked about with the raisin sounds fantastic, and I'm going to go home and make that. But raw fennel, just slice it up and serve it like celery. It is so crunchy and refreshing, and it really is kind of a light, crunchy thing in the middle of winter.
I just have to mention that Sue from San Francisco wrote in to ask if we had forgotten about fennel.
Yes, so we had forgotten, so thank you for the reminder.
And we go now to Joan from the Upper West Side. Hi, Joan.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, speak to Melissa Clark.
Okay, well, actually, my call was prompted by Leonard saying that cutting up the kale gets to be a chore. So I wanted to give you an incentive, all everybody listening. If you cut up your kale and your Swiss chard and any of those other vegetables, even your spinach, and then you keep the stems, stick them in the refrigerator, and then when you've got about a saucepan full of them, chop them up with water, cover them with water in the pan, and just bring them to a boil. And when they're soft, put the mixture into your blender in batches, and you make wonderful soups, which I put into individual plastic containers and freeze them so that when I come home hungry, I always have a wonderful fresh soup.
I never heard of that. That's a great idea.
No, you can also delicious. You can also cook the stems with the regular leaves, but you put them in, you cook them first,
right.
And then they soften if you cut them in little pieces, and they actually add a nice little crunch.
Now, have you
they?
Done that with kale? I've only done that with Swiss chard and with beets.
I've done it with Swiss chard. I was just making the extension there in my mind.
But I've never done that with kale, and you know, I'm going to try that because I think that, I mean, why wouldn't it work? And just to, you know, I mean, I use broccoli stems. I love to use stems, so why not kale stems? And I just haven't done it, so I am very inspired. Thank you for that call.
Nancy from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I am definitely trying to up my use of winter veggies as main dishes, and I'm wondering, besides mushroom or butternut squash, if you have any recipes that are favorite for risotto, because I'm kind of tired of pasta.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Celery root. Celery root in risotto is delicious. And this is what I would do. I would take the celery root and I would grate it. So you have very fine shreds and you saute that at the beginning with your rice. And you let it all, it should all cook together. It is such a great combination with rice. And then to finish, you can get some fresh celery leaves and just chop those up and keep them very fresh and add them at the end of the dish with a squeeze of lemon or Meyer lemon. That is going to be a terrific dinner.
You could also put mushrooms into
that. Oh, yeah, you could put mushrooms into that, yeah.
Thank you so much. That sounds great.
Thank you. John from Paramus. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. You know, I'm a little disappointed in the basil that I get in the supermarkets in, over the winter because I usually grow my own. So I don't know where I don't think it's local at all. I don't know where it's coming from. But I was wondering, did I start growing my own basil by now?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, indoors. You can't, don't put it outside because of the frost will get it. But if, I think that if you have, do you have a sunny window?
Yeah, we have a few sunny windows, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you, you know, start it, if you get a little grow light bulb, just one of those little, you can buy them at the hardware store.
I still have them left over from the 60s.
Oh. Then you are all
gonna,
set.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you what you were using it for.
No, but that, get it set. I mean, that is going to work really well, and you're going to have much better flavor than the stuff you
can
get in the supermarket.
Do I have to buy them seeds, or can I get little plants? Can you think I can get little plants?
Probably not. You probably have to buy the seeds, which is why you're going to need the grow light to germinate it. But you can get the seeds. God. You can get the seeds anywhere.
What about herbs in general? I mean, do you think about pairing herbs with these winter vegetables?
You know, believe it or not, the winter has been so mild that my thyme and my rosemary have survived, and I actually throw those in. Every time I roast vegetables, any kind of vegetable, I will throw in a couple of stalks of thyme, a couple of stalks of rosemary. I don't even take the leaves off. I just throw them in whole. I toss it together, and it really perfumes the entire dish. So, yes, if you can get fresh herbs, the farmer's market still has definitely rosemary, thyme. All those branchy herbs do very well over the winter.
All of those.
Especially this winter, this non-winter.
All those Garfunkel and Simon herbs. Melissa Clark is here. She writes a Good Appetite column in the New York Times every Wednesday. In fact, she has a nice column today that has nothing to do with our topic. but you'll find a lot of the things we're discussing in her latest cookbook, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. We have a lot of people writing in. David wants to know about carnival squash, which is often called sweet dumpling squash.
Delicious.
He says he has about five, and he doesn't know how to get the most out of them.
Those are great. That when I was talking about delicata squash, I was thinking in the back of my mind, wait, there's dumpling squash too. Those are so sweet. What I would do is I would cut it in half, scoop out the seeds, and then cut it. You can leave the skin on. Just cut it into wedges and roast those wedges really simply. It's so sweet you don't even need to add anything. But if you want to add a little cinnamon, it would just perfume your house. Olive oil, cinnamon, salt, pepper. So you want a savory dish here. It's savory and sweet from the squash. Fantastic.
Now, we haven't satisfied people's concerns about turnips. A listener from Philadelphia writes,
yes,
any recommendations on what to do with the plethora of turnips supplied by my winter farm share?
Yes.
Especially for those of us who aren't fans of turnips.
If you're not a fan of turnip, that's hard. I would say just roast the heck out of it. I mean, I love turnips, so I like to eat them raw. I think just a raw turnip in the fridge, I will peel it and I'll eat it like a carrot. But if you don't love that flavor, the more you roast it, the less it'll taste like a turnip, and the more it'll taste like a potato.
And a listener actually wanted to know about eating raw potatoes.
I think that you can't do that.
I think they're hard to digest.
That they will give you a stomach ache. So have I always been told.
We go now to to Melanie in what is that? Lagerbot? Lagerbor?
Hello.
Log Harbor. Okay. It was written weirdly for me. But Melanie, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. It's Lock Arbor. Anyway,
yes.
Right by Asbury Park, New Jersey. I was calling because what I do with collard greens is I, you know, wash them well, take that middle big stem out, and then I roll them up and slice them very, very fine, like ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a little bit of oil in a frying pan, just a little tiny bit, and I just put them in there. Like that, like those real skinny ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
Throw them all in, put a top on, just with the water that they've been washed, on a medium kind of heat, medium to low heat, for like 5 minutes. And they wilt right down. They're tender, and they're fabulous.
Yeah.
Everybody who eats them goes crazy over them.
That is a great way to do collard greens. I pretty much do exactly what you do, except before I add the collard greens, I don't put chopped garlic in. I mash two garlic cloves, and then I take the peel off, but I leave them smashed, and I throw those in the oil with a pinch of red pepper flakes. But otherwise, I do exactly what you do, and it is so good and so easy.
Sometimes I'll dice an onion, chop an onion really fine,
yeah,
and, you know, a half an onion or something, and put that in ahead, but you know, instead of the garlic, as you're saying.
Yeah, yeah,
and
that's
I have
nice.
One other quick question. Did you say you shouldn't eat parsnips raw?
You know, no, I don't know that it's bad for your body to eat them raw. I just know that I've never enjoyed them raw. They're hard to chew. Do you like them raw?
I cut them up really fine sometimes and put them in with carrots in a salad.
Oh, you know, maybe I'll try that, or maybe even grated like I would do a celery root. I am
mm-hmm.
going to try that. Thank you for the idea.
Thank you for calling
great
us.
Great program. Thanks so much.
We have your recipe for roasted cabbage on our website. Can you tell us a little
bit
about
that?
Oh,
yes. Okay, so we were talking about cabbage before, how much I love cabbage, and it is one of those overlooked vegetables that people just think, oh, I'm going to steam it. You know what you can do with cabbage? Roast it. Take your cabbage, cut it up into wedges, put it on a roasting pan with any kind of oil. I like peanut oil, but you can use olive oil, salt and pepper, and roast it at high heat. And you know what happens? The cabbage gets crispy. The edge, all those little edges in there become brown, and you've got this, you know, soft cabbage on the inside, but then this crispiness on the outside. And it is so good and so unusual. Even cabbage haters will love this dish. Well, will like this dish. Do it high heat. I forget if I did it at 450 or 425.
When I was a kid, the only way we ever ate cabbage was stuffed cabbage.
Oh, stuffed cabbage is great. Stuffed cabbage, that is a lot of work. Did you make? No, your mother made that.
Other people made it. I ate it when I would go to weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Yes, next to the stuffed derma.
Gabrielle, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
We are well so far.
Great. I have a question. I have these prepackaged cooked beets that are mm-hmm. sitting in my fridge. And I don't know what else to do with them aside from putting them in a salad.
They are great for salads, but they are also great for borscht. Are you a borscht lover?
I am.
Then what you do is you just cut them up, or you could shred them up in your food processor, saute some onion, saute some cabbage if you like cabbage, and let
uh-huh.
it get really, really, you know, cook it down for a while before you add the beets. Then add beets. You can add water, but if you have a little broth, it'll add flavor. And some chopped dill. Or dill seed, if you don't want to use the fresh herb, and just let the whole thing simmer, and then you finish it with a little bit of red wine vinegar or a dollop of sour cream or both. And it is so easy, because if you have the beets already cooked, the whole thing will take maybe 20 minutes.
Wow.
So
okay.
It's great. Try it.
And can they be sautéed or roasted since they've been boiled already, or is that a bad idea?
Yeah, it's a bad idea. It's not a bad idea, but you're not going to get the caramelization. If you roast them, it's just going to get them kind of warm and soggy.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you so much.
Because
you're
of
welcome.
All the water that's
Yeah, because
inside.
they're very moist at this point.
Ron from Huntington. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Lynn. Great show once again. Yeah, with the lettuce. We have a head of lettuce. Instead of breaking off the stem and throwing it out, you can clean that, trim it up nice, boil it, and then add it to an antipasto with oil and vinegar. It tastes rather well.
Really?
Because it's garbage.
I never heard that
I have
before.
Never heard that, and I'm in love with that idea. That's
Thank
fantastic.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Because one of the problems I always have with lettuce is I'm one of those people who pulls off the really tough white stuff. And some other people like it because it gives a bit more crunch to the salad. But I've always thought that was really... you know, a little too much roughage. But here's a whole other way to go.
To boil it and to put it with oil for an antipasti, that's brilliant. I am learning more from you listeners out there than you're probably learning from me. This is great.
We go now to Ettore, is it?
Ettore.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Well, I'm very keen in cardoons. Have you ever heard about cardoons?
Oh, yes, cardoons. Now, yes. Where are you from? What's your nationality?
Well, Italy.
Okay. Because
it's the same family as the artichokes, but you only have this basically like the celery. I mean, basically the leaves that you have to clean and take out the strings. And what I do normally is gratiné.
Oh.
Gratin.
And those come in the season when? Those are not, we don't have those yet, right?
They aren't like winter because they come, the artichoke used to be winter.
No, we don't see them anymore in the wintertime.
Yeah. But, you know, I haven't, cardoons are funny. I only see them up, but you know, in Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, I see cardoons. I haven't seen them at the farmer's market. I don't know if they're not really grown locally, if the climate doesn't support it, but they might be imported. But they are wonderful because you're right, they taste like artichokes. They've got this artichoke flavor, but they're juicy. You know, they're like you were saying, like celery.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling us, and we have no time left, but I wonder about artichokes. Most people cook them the same way. They steam them and then dip the leaves, the soft part of the leaf, into something. Is that the best way to serve artichokes?
That is a great way to serve it, but another way is to, I like to clean them down to their hearts. In fact, I did a New York Times video on how to clean artichokes, which you can find online if you want to see how to do it. And then instead of just steaming them, braise them. So water, olive oil, lots of aromatics, garlic in the water, and they come out tender, and they are superb.
I had a wonderful artichoke soup in France.
Ooh, that sounds good. Mm. I've never done that.
Melissa Clark's column, A Good Appetite, appears every Wednesday in the New York Times dining section. Her latest cookbook, her 32nd, is called Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. Thank you so much for being with us again.
This was so fun.
And the chances are good that a vegetable will respond to you. Rutabaga.